All right. Welcome to another edition of Home Studio Craft. I'm Scott.
I'm Tippins.
How's it going, Tippins?
It's going well. Going well.
Week was good.
Yeah, good week. I'm having some issues with my computer.
Yikes.
Producing some songs.
Yeah.
It's
what's happening with it?
It's an older computer. It's like 4 years old.
Yep.
It's pretty basic. 8 gigs of RAM. I'm pretty sure it's 8 gigs.
Yeah. Is it desktop or?
Yeah, it's a desktop. But, you know, I'm noticing I use Ableton like you do. And right. Like at the top right, the computer usage percentage is getting high.
And right.
It's taking forever to open some of my songs and stuff like that. So I think I need an upgrade, which...
Well, you can do a couple things like without having to get a new machine.
Okay.
You know, one thing I would do is pretty cheap to do is take a look at just putting some more RAM in, right? So you probably get an extra 8 gigs of RAM for, you know, $30-$40.
Mm.
Also, see if you've got a hard drive. If you've got a hard drive, you can replace that and put it in a solid state drive. You're going to get much less, just going to get much faster response times as far as that goes. And a couple other simple things, just disable any programs you've got set to start up automatically. Like, you know, if you're using Spotify or, you know, Adobe Creative Cloud or something like that,
yeah.
They use a lot of resources. So disable any non-essential startup programs. And also when you're recording, just disable everything but your DAW. You know, you do that. And then within your DAW itself, what I recommend is you can adjust your buffer size. So if you go into the settings section of your digital audio workstation, you'll find something called the buffer, which is basically the section or the setting that controls how the computer processes the audio signal. And when you're recording, you want to have that buffer lower so that there's less latency. So what I usually keep mine at 128 samples. And then if I've got a lot of tracks that I've recorded in my DAW, say like 40 or what, 36, whatever it is,
yeah.
I go ahead and adjust the buffer size higher when I'm mixing. Because latency isn't so much of an issue. So I'll go from, say, right? So
yeah.
I go from like 128 samples up to, I think it's 1,024. And that cuts like the CPU usage in half.
Okay. Okay. So, and so like, what's the difference? Like, can you just break down buffer size and sample rate?
Well, sample rate is just the amount of... processing that, or like the amount of samples that your DAW is going to take per second, right? So it's like a higher resolution photograph, if you will, right? So the higher the sample rate, the more data that the DAW and your computer are processing per second. So theoretically, it's a higher resolution, right?
Okay. Because, yeah, you see a lot when you're starting off about like, you know, buffer size, sample rate and stuff with like setting up your interface and DAW and everything.
Sure.
So, yeah, I still didn't know what that really meant until just now. So,
that's cool. Yeah. I mean, I think most of your, you know, your interfaces and your DAW is going to probably come set up at like 44.1 kilohertz this as a sample rate, which is basically what CDs operate at for anybody out there who's still listening to music on CDs. But I think I have my DAW set at 48,000.
Okay. So like if I didn't already have a computer and was just starting clean, like what are some few things you would look for in a starter computer or a computer that can maybe carry you throughout, you know, a lot of your music production journey.
Okay. So, well, I would look for a minimum of 16 gigabytes of RAM or memory. More is absolutely better. So if you can afford more memory, get more memory. You know, 32 gigs, 64, 128, you know, whatever you can afford. And then obviously solid state drive, it's going to be, you know, much faster. The next thing I would look at is what's the processor like, the more cores you have. So the cores are like little individual processors within a processor, so they can process more data concurrently. Yeah. So, you know, a minimum of 8 cores, but there's so many new processes out there that are like 12 cores, 24 cores, you know, 32, 36, whatever. There's just much more powerful processes out there. So I would say get the most amount of memory you can afford, get the best processor you can afford, and get something with a solid state drive. And then also look at, like your buses, like the connectivity, right? So get something with USB-C or Thunderbolt 4. Mm. They're the newest, you know, fastest. I think that both of those transmit data at like 40 gigabytes per second.
Wow. Yeah, that's so not even fast. Something I would have think about, you know.
Yeah, it's good, you know, because that relates to your peripherals, like your audio interface. So something like an audio interface that uses USB 2 is going to have more latency than an audio interface that has USB-C, for example. Mm. So, you know, that could make a difference as well. So those are some simple things. And it doesn't matter if you're running a Mac or you're running Windows, whatever, you know, operating system you're comfortable with or already using and you know. I would say stick with that because, you know, if you're a Windows user and you switch over to Mac, well, then there's a learning curve to learn that operating system.
Yeah, sure.
And vice versa, right? If, like, I use a Mac to jump over to Windows, I'm not going to be as familiar with how Ableton works in Windows as I am with how it works in a Mac.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, time is a precious commodity for everybody, so you definitely want to
That's a big reason I chose when I first started Ableton over Logic was, I don't use MacBooks and Mac stuff. So, Ableton seemed like super accessible and stuff for Windows.
Yeah.
But as far as like, so RAM's easy to upgrade.
You could definitely do that.
As far as like a processor though, like that's tougher,
right? Yeah, because you're actually, you know, replacing that chip. I mean, it's not that it's difficult. I mean, you could do it. Yeah. Or if you have a friend who's, you know, good with computers, you could have them do it for you. But you have to look at like the cost, right?
Exactly.
Is it really worth it? Like, how old's your computer? You know, what's it cost for the new, you know, chip for the processor? So it just gets down to that. Is it economically feasible as compared to, you know, if your computer's 4 or 5 years old, it's not going to be really worth spending $400 on a new processor.
So if you're shopping around, like, so RAM is something like, you can always upgrade, but the processor's more like, you know.
It's more costly.
Yeah, make a decision.
A lot cheaper. Okay. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, You have to have a good computer, right? That's not locking up on you all the time because it's the cornerstone of your studio, right? Everything is centered around that. You're installing all your plugins on there, your DAW, everything, connecting your interface to it. So you have to have something that's, you know, that works for you. But the other thing is too, is like, so you said your computer was locking up on you a little bit when you're using Ableton. The other thing you can do is like, so for vocals or like your guitar tracks, for example, or bass tracks, any of the audio tracks, you can go ahead and print those or render those where basically you're taking that audio file and all the effects that you have applied to that audio file and you're exporting it, right? So you're basically, you're printing that file And then you're going to re-import it. So it's got all those effects already processed and recorded in essence. So the computer doesn't have to do it again in real time.
Mm.
And the other option is, have you ever like tried freezing any of your tracks?
No.
Do you know what that is?
No, I see that option in there, but no.
So all freezing does, and this and any digital audio workstation will have that capability, is that it temporarily renders or prints the tracks. So it basically processes all the plugins and the audio file as like one file.
Okay.
It does it with MIDI too. So if you've got like some, you know, some software synths that are using a lot of CPU, go ahead and freeze the track. Or if you're using like a drum plugin, like Easy Drummer or something like that, and you've broken out your drums into multiple instances of, or multiple tracks of Easy Drummer, like separate kick, separate snare, you know, floor tom, rack toms, cymbals, hi-hats. So you're using what, you know, like six instances of Easy Drummer, which is going to crush your machine.
Vocals get crazy.
Vocals too. Yeah, all the processing of vocals. So if you've got your vocals recorded and your you know, your drum tracks or whatever, and you're recording guitar on top of that, and your computer's not handling it, just go ahead, select the track, right click, select freeze. Might take a couple seconds for it to process. Yeah.
Wow.
Game changer.
Right there. Yeah. That's, I'm going to go home and do that right today.
Yeah. Oh, man, for
that's
sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That'll be huge. Because, some of my songs, it'll take like 5 minutes for my computer to open it up.
Dude.
Because there's like 40 takes of backing vocals. There's we got 8 harmonies and 4 of them are muted, so it's crazy.
Yeah, man, just freeze them. It'll definitely help you out a lot, and you'll notice it'll just drop that CPU usage down a lot, so that's definitely good.
Yeah, that'll be huge for it. Okay. Thank you.
I wanted to ask you too about so that last post we did a couple of weeks ago about you know, how people are listening to music.
Yeah, from the last podcast. Yeah.
So talk to me about that a little bit.
Just people are having it out in the comments a little bit. People are, one comment, I don't want to misquote the guy, but it basically said, "Disgusting, never mixed to the lowest common denominator." And then you have people like us who've kind of accepted that that's
a reality.
Yeah.
I mean.
And like you said, making sure it sounds good on a smartphone. So.
Right.
But
also across all platforms, right? So smartphones, you know, your earbuds, your headphones.
And that's what I think a lot of the negative.
Car stereo.
More negative people are missing is that it's just. One person said, you know, it's just another thing to check, you know, like being in the car, like, you know, checking in mono or something like that. It's something to check how it sounds.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, you kind of, you know, you learn your monitors, right? You learn how your monitors sound by doing that. So if, you know, you think your mix sounds good in your studio, right? And then you go out and you listen to it in your car. It's like, bass is just overwhelming, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many times have we done that, right? It just sounds like shit. So, okay. So with that knowledge, right, you come back in, you know that you've got to make some adjustments in your mix to, you know, to take care of that overcompensation for your bass.
Yeah.
So you're dropping that down. Maybe you're cutting some frequencies, you know, below 40 Hertz or 50 Hertz or whatever that really exceptional, you know, bass response is coming from. And then also drop the volume down a couple of decibels. So, you know, it's a process of learning your monitors within your studio and seeing how it sounds. Cause it might sound great on like some AirPods or something, right? Where you don't have as much of a bass response, but if it doesn't translate well to your car, then you got to go back and make some adjustments.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense to adamantly fight that to me. Like, if it's what's happened in the world, because we're lying if we say, you know, your buddy sends you a song on your phone.
Right.
You know, you might not have the time to be like, hold on, let me devote 20 minutes to go in my studio, right, set up my monitors to show this the respect it deserves. No, you're going to probably, you know, just give it a quick listen.
You listen to your phone. I'll usually listen to it with my AirPods in.
Yeah.
Yep. Or if I'm just sitting at my desk, you know, working or something, I'll definitely listen to it on my phone.
And if you're on the go or something, you know, you're walking around, you just, whatever.
Yeah. You know, that one user commented, you know, was right. It's just one more thing. It's just one more way that people, but, you know, I do feel kind of, I don't want to say discouraged, but, you know, it did kind of like take me back a little bit to, you know, because, you know, we spent so much time trying to get a mix right so it sounds great. Because, you know, in my mind, I'm imagining like this nice home stereo system. You're taking the time to like listen to the song. But that's just not how people are consuming stuff.
Yeah. Well, I will say that like, listening on headphones and the car wasn't on the, there's a lot of comments asking about the car. I think it just wasn't on there because of measurability purposes. Like it might just be hard to measure people plugging into their car.
I think what it could be is also that they're listening to their listening with their phones through their car stereo.
Exactly.
Right. I think that's probably what it was.
So that's why cars wasn't on the list. We actually didn't make the list.
Like PC Magazine, a few other, it was like three sources.
Yeah, Tech Radar.
Yeah. And something, one other one, I forget what it was.
But so like it does feel atmospheric a lot of times with headphones on, you know. It's almost like let's say you're, you know, walking around the airport with your headphones on, it makes you feel more like that's like a soundtrack of what you're doing. So I feel like headphones do give mixes justice.
Oh, I love listening to music on headphones. Yeah. That's probably my favorite way to listen with a nice set of headphones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's great. One other thing that I saw was really interesting. Just ran across some data about vinyl, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I remember, I was probably 15 years ago, maybe a little longer. I was just curious, like what vinyl sales were like at that point in time. And I think if they were around like 2%, right? Because they had gone down to like, I don't want to say zero, but I mean, 2% is nothing.
When you say 2%, you mean
of total like sales, okay, like, you know, compared to CDs at that time, right? Where CDs were still being used. But now they're actually up to like 8%, which is still small in the scope of things, but it shows growth. And what's interesting is like the demographic that's buying them is like all Gen Z for the most part. There's like the largest one and millennials.
Yeah.
But the thing that I found interesting is like 57% of the Gen Z millennial buyers of vinyl don't even have record players. They're buying it like to support bands that they love. They're buying it because it's some tangible, you know, piece of music, right? Like you can, you know, pull out the sleeve and read the lyrics and, you know, look at the artwork on the album cover. Anyway, I just thought that was incredibly interesting. And it makes me happy to see that resurgence.
I see it with people around my age and younger and stuff, you know. I actually personally had a few records before I had a record. I have one now, but I see it for sure. I think it's everywhere. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Right here. Pretenders. Great record if you haven't heard it. Really good.
There is something to be said about having, like, you know, collecting things like that. If it just feels different than just adding stuff to your Apple Music playlist, obviously.
It absolutely does. And it's, you know, it's something you can hold on to, right? It's, I don't know. It just, to me, it's like there's more value there. It's not as disposable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And they used to do cool stuff with, like, you know, the inside, and they'd have like insert in the CD or record or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember, like, when, you know, the transition was made to go to CDs, which, you know, I don't know who's even using CDs that much anymore. But one of the, like, the complaints for me at that time was, like, you know, you went from these nice album covers down to these little tiny small things in these jewel boxes that just, I don't know, just kind of, I mean, the sound quality was great. It was great listening to music without hearing the clicks and pops, right, of vinyl. But it lacked like a certain warmth to it that that vinyl had. And, you know, I just miss seeing like the larger artwork.
Sure, but, yeah. I have a huge DVD collection that I've been toting around apartments throughout my 20s. And, yeah.
And do you still have a DVD player?
No, I have an Xbox that can play DVD, you go. But right. You know, they're in a storage unit right now, but
I've got one of those too.
Yeah, it's nice. It is nice having. I'm missing my DVD collection now though, right. Because, like, you know, a certain movie might not be on streaming or something like that. So with music, and they change stuff all the time,
right?
Like, especially on albums, like. You know, they get remastered.
Sure.
Which I didn't know. If an album's remastered, usually it means the artist is getting like all the money from it now.
I don't know.
Yeah, I heard, like, you know,
is that true?
It's like a case by case basis, but there's a lot of the times the contracts will expire.
Right.
That they had with the label. So if you see something's remastered, a lot of times the artist is getting a much larger cut of the profits from that.
So do they consider that a new release, and for that reason, or?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how it's like labeled with like charts and stuff.
Right.
And like, but I know, like, if it supports the artist more usually if it's a remastered version.
Right.
And then Taylor Swift, for example, she did that.
She recorded her whole album.
Yeah.
Albums.
Yeah, that's next level.
Yeah, but, for sure. That was like a big fuck you to her former manager / record company, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good for her, man. Good for her. Hey, man, I wanted to ask you about some of the plugins that you're using to, you know, record your guitar and... You know, how you feel about, like, what makes you choose to use a plugin over, say, you know, recording, you know, micing up your Marshall?
Sure. Well, at first, when I first started with the plugins, I had a not great amp. I had a Fender Mustang, and that was my only amp.
Right.
So
is that a solid state?
Yeah. So it's kind of like a modeler in a way.
Okay.
You can choose between a bunch of Fender amps. It's an early modeling amp from like 2014 or so.
Right.
But you know, it isn't the best amp.
Yeah.
So I was using plugins to kind of just like simplify things, and I can tweak it the whole time. Whereas, like if I just mic that Fender, it might not sound like, I might not like the sound of it in a week.
Right.
So I want to, you know, do less distortion. I can't really do that.
How big was the speaker in it? Do you remember? It's like a 12 inch, 10 inch.
That was a 10 inch. So I currently have a Marshall JCM 2000, which,
is that 212s?
Yeah. I think it's 212. So I do mic that up sometimes, but, I really do it for ease of use, or like
The plugins.
Yeah, for like simplicity purposes, and being able to tweak the sound further down the line.
Right.
Especially if I'm using, heavy gain or something, like, it's just harder to fine tune my sound, I feel like, sometimes miking my amp.
Right.
But The downside.
Yeah, because with some of the plugins, I mean, you can choose like, okay, well, what mic am I going to use on this virtual cabinet, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
What kind of speakers? What cabinet am I going to have? What head are you going to use? Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
And so with like Tonex, for example, you know, you have options of Fender models,
right.
Marshalls, you name it.
Right.
And different mic combinations. They have a bunch of different famous plugins modeled.
Right.
And they're sounding better and better as yeah. time goes. So they're starting to sound pretty damn good.
So have you A-B'd like just, you know, whatever, throwing an SM57 up in front of your amp?
So this is where I do want to use my amp, where I sometimes get that tone, that Marshall sound.
Yeah.
I play Les Paul, so like
yeah,
sometimes like it just sounds way better straight out of my amp. So
right.
I'm like stuck in the middle on it, where
right.
I do prefer the sound of the amp when I get it right, but
yep.
the time of, you know, I don't necessarily have everything fine-tuned as far as my setup, like as far as plug and play, like it
right.
sets up really quickly.
Right.
So yeah, I'm in the middle.
Right.
I like both aspects.
So it's neither,
of both.
It's not one or the other, right? It's
yeah.
just whatever, it's a tool, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever's appropriate for the time.
Yeah.
Check it out. I was reading the new edition of Sound on Sound magazine. And there's an article in there about a guy who had a 48-track recording that he had made of, I think it was him and his band. And he used it with all basically outboard gear, right? Recorded it into his DAW, had it mixed, mastered, and everything. Then he went back and he basically, analyzed all the gear that he had with plugins, right? He basically like tried to replicate all the outboard gear with plugins, and he went through painstakingly through track by track every single one, and then he re-recorded the song again with, you know, 48 tracks, but it's with all plugins.
Awesome.
Instead of all the outboard gear. And he was like, yeah, it sounds just as good.
Wow.
Yeah. And he has like thousands of dollars of like beautiful outboard gear, just beautiful stuff. But, you know, he just said it was just, it sounded great. And there's actually, I don't know, for anybody out there who gets Sound on Sound, or you could even go to their website, there's a link on their website, I believe, where you can go and listen to that A-B comparison. So it's a new edition, the June edition of Sound on Sound. I wish I remembered the guy's name, but you'll find it. Just Google it. It's like 48 tracks using all outboard gear, and then the same 48 tracks using all plugins, and listen to them side by side. It's pretty incredible. So
I believe it.
Yeah,
that'll be awesome to see. That's a great way to test that out.
Yeah.
It does feel nice, like pushing air, you know, like with the tube amp.
Like for, yeah, no doubt. Like guitars.
Yeah,
for sure. Like I'll pretty much all the time I'll mic up my amp
mm-hmm.
all the time, almost. Unless I'm like, you know, I got an idea and I don't want to take the time to actually do it. And I want to put the idea down. I'll just, you know, I'll plug into my interface. You know, I'll pull up some IK plugins and, you know, I'll just use those and, yeah, they sound fine.
So when you're miking up, when you're using the method, the traditional miking up your amp, are you doing like reverb on your amp usually, or are you doing it?
That's a good question. I usually use a little bit of reverb on my amp. Yeah,
okay.
Pretty much, you know. And I'll leave that on, and I'll add more onto in the DAW if I want to.
If you were going to do, like, let's say you were doing a heavier distortion sounding song, like,
right.
you know, high gain song,
right.
would you do that, or would you do it all in the box still?
That's a good question. I would probably do two takes, right? Mm-hmm. I would do one that's clean, right? I do that same part. But it's also more of a challenge, too, because a lot of the times the guitar sound is an integral part of the song.
Yeah.
So if the song called for a lot of distortion, right, and you're not playing it with a distortion, it doesn't have the same feel.
Yeah.
So it really depends on the song. So sometimes I'll just record it a clean take, and then I'll record it the way with like some overdrive to it.
Best of both worlds. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I got more flexibility, right? And then I can blend them together, right? Or I could take the clean take and throw some plugins on and you know, see how they sound.
Yeah.
So cool. Just flexibility.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, but it's also too, you know, like that, like a really heavily distorted sound. It depends on what else you've got going on the song, because that particular sound I find takes up a lot of bandwidth. You know, it's sure. just so I end up, you know, using some filter EQs just to kind of to tame that.
Yeah,
on that high
bass
and mid range end.
So
yeah, so it doesn't wash out the vocal and so forth. But
yeah, we have. Yeah, our songs are a mix of like.
I think your
stuff
sounded great, man.
Yeah, I got to show you some more. Thank you, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to send you some of the stuff we've been working on.
Do it.
Yeah, and I'm nervous to show it to you. We're nervous to send it to you and get eviscerated.
No,
no,
absolutely not.
He would never.
Absolutely
do that,
not.
But
yeah.
We would be eviscerating ourselves waiting on the.
Yeah, I think you guys
feedback.
Already do that, don't you?
yeah. For sure, yeah.
Everybody does, man. That's a problem. Like, everybody's so critical of themselves. And, you know, what's so funny is, like, you know, like the little things that you notice, right, 99.99% of people are not going to hear what you hear because you're so close to it.
Well, with guitar and tone, that's a big one where...
Ooh, yeah, for sure.
It obviously matters a lot. And,
yeah.
But I obsess about it. Guitarists obsess about it, and then it's like,
you know what? I think that's a good problem to have, right? Because it makes you strive to be better, right? And I'm with you, man. You gotta have that tone.
Yeah. But then, you know, I'll be talking to some of my friends about a song who aren't musicians, and I'll be like, God, the guitar tone on that song,
right?
Like, the hell are you talking about?
Right.
The tone. It's just
right.
They don't think about like the muggles, non-musicians. I call them muggles.
The muggles.
they it's always interesting to see how they think about music and in general to me, because that's who our audience is.
Are you referring to like more like just casual music listeners? You know?
Yeah, just the general consumer. You know, they might be passionate about music, but
right.
they might not know what a guitar tone is. You
they're
know?
Not going to hear it with this. Well, I mean, here's the thing, right? They may not even be able to pick the guitar out, right?
Exactly.
From a keyboard. I mean, because they're not discerning.
Yeah.
They're not musicians, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I heard a song yesterday. Even pop song that's huge right now, and it was a keyboard solo, but you could tell it was a keyboard, but it had an electric guitar sound to it.
Some of those patches are pretty close, but you can tell, like, you know, you can't do the slides, and even though they're using the wheel, it's just not the same.
That's something another thing, like, remembering when we're making songs is that we're making it for, like we were talking about, the muggles, the non-musicians. Like,
right.
You know, sometimes when I'll be writing something, I'll be like, oh, I can't use that. That's too boring, you know? But
right.
It's like, you know, I might get roasted by an Yngwie Malmsteen fanboy online if I do
You know
that.
What, man? You know? I just say this. You do what you like.
Yeah.
Right. Do what you like. Do what's true to you and put that out there.
Yeah.
You know, fuck what, you know, Yngwie Malmsteen's fanboys.
No, but yeah, that's like I saw John Mayer interview on it,
yeah.
where he was talking about, you know, playing for don't play for musicians.
Right.
Don't, you know, produce for musicians.
Right. Because
they're not who makes what makes an album go platinum, you know.
It's right.
Yeah, it's the regular yeah. people.
And yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that, I think you start from like writing what you like,
yeah.
right? And does it resonate with you? Does it make you feel good? Because you know when you write a song that if it's, you know, when it's right, because you feel it. Like you go from a verse to into your chorus, it's like, oh yeah, this sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, coming back out and.
You're hearing yeah. melodies already, yeah. you know.
Yeah, yeah, do what you like. You know, I wouldn't be preoccupied with, you know, what some, you know, guitar hero is going to say about it, whatever, right?
No, sure, yeah, sure. So. But, yeah, it does cross your mind, because, like, the music, you know, being in the music community online and stuff, like, you see comments and stuff where people be like, John Mayer sucks.
It's just, you know, ridiculous.
Jimmy Page was terrible.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's just, yeah.
I think people have too much time in their hands, man. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, sure. And, you know, I think it's really easy to be critical of somebody who's, you know, putting themselves out there, right?
Yeah. And then you hear someone like Claro, I think we talked about her on
yeah.
one of the first two podcasts, but she, yeah. you know, minimalist, to, you know, as far as minimalist goes with some
yeah.
of her production and melodies and stuff. And, she's like one of the biggest artists in the world.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah. So screw them.
Screw them.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Yeah.
You good?
I'm all good.
All right, brother.
Yeah.
All right. We'll catch you guys in a couple weeks.
Peace.
Thanks for listening.